number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You know the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, it is a night where the Villanova Wildcats are champs. Go back to 1985 when they played the perfect game against Georgetown. And tonight they had the perfect ending with Chris Jenkins knocking down a three-pointer. And this coming after Marcus Page had tied the game with a really great three-pointer of his own. A back-and-forth battle that I really enjoyed from start to finish. I thought this game had a good ebb and flow. It had its ups and its downs. Both teams weren't great all the time, but they were great when they needed to be great. I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad it got the ending that it got, because I think this is going to be a memorable basketball game. I think this is going to go down as one of the better ones. I don't think it's the best one. I don't think it's going to become the greatest thing we've ever saw. But I think when you have a buzzer beater like that, it becomes memorable. I think when you have a game that is well played like it was at times, it's memorable. This is an iconic power in North Carolina. Villanova has had very good basketball teams over the years with Jay Wright. One went to the Final Four in 2009. After that, it has not been very good. They've had struggles getting out of the first weekend of the tournament. This is a senior team. They got a lot of seniors on this team. They had a couple juniors. They got some young players, too. It's a good mix. It's a good blend. It's a team that is really plays well with each other. I thought North Carolina was the same way. I thought they had a very good team, and I thought they played well together, too. But, boy, Villanova really flowed well tonight, and I think this was – they did everything that they needed to do. They hit their shots. They shot very well. They shot 58%. They were good in the paint. They were good defensively, like they've always been, but it wasn't without its flaws. It wasn't without its moments. I think they had some turnovers that could have cost them the game. I think North Carolina, on the same end, made some critical mistakes. There were times where Bryce Johnson was not around, and there were times where Marcus Page wasn't active and wasn't in the game and wasn't playing well, and then all of a sudden he was playing well. So it had its ups and downs, but that's expected in basketball. This is not something that you can just sort of write down and say all of these things, all these guys are going to play well all the time. I mean, Archie Diacono, for example, was the Final Four most valuable player, but he had a key turnover at the end of the game. It could have cost him the game. So things aren't always going to be perfect, but it had a perfect ending tonight. Chris Jenkins had a nice look three with about 4.5 seconds remaining. They went down the court. He knocked it down as the buzzer sound, and Villanova's the champs. We've been trying to put this in perspective. It might be too soon, but I started, start thinking about where does this rank? Where is this? Because I felt great at the end of the game. I felt like I watched something magical and special. So naturally, I do want to know, all right, where would I put this? Now, I have two criterias, and this is basically how I look at it. There are memorable games, but they're also memorable for different reasons. There are games that are memorable because of tonight, where you have a legitimate heavyweight battle between two really good teams that are using their strength and making the other team fail at a few things. That's what you had tonight. And in the end, it resulted in a close game that was tied with 4 seconds left, that Villanova was able to get the final shot and win the game. If North Carolina had the ball in a tie game, they probably would have won this. But there are also games that are memorable because they made a statement about a particular era or something along those lines. It doesn't have to be a tight game. It doesn't have to be a buzzer beater. It doesn't have to be North Carolina beating Houston. It doesn't necessarily have to be Villanova beating Georgetown, shooting 70%+ from the floor. UNLV is a game that comes to mind. UNLV, their finals game in McNichols Arena in Denver against Duke was a 30-point blowout. But it's really memorable for those who watched it, because UNLV was the biggest program at that time. And Jerry Tarkanian was their colorful coach. And they had strong, good players. And Duke was still a program that was looking to find that first national championship. Final Four identity? The Blue Devils already had that. Championship had eluded them. They went into that finals against UNLV with Christian Laettner, Bobby Hurley, and rest of the cast, and got blown away. Blown away. And the statement was made by UNLV. But it set up Duke winning the national championship over the next 2 years, including beating UNLV in the Final Four the next year. So again, it doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be a buzzer beater. It doesn't have to be a close finish for it to be one of the more memorable games. And there's a lot of games like that. But I like this one because it was excellence on the floor. I think both teams played really well. Again, not perfect, but well. It was entertaining. It had a good ebb and flow to it. There were lead changes. It went back and forth. It had great shots. Listen, go back and remember some of those rainbows that Villanova shot tonight. Just over the overreaching arms of Tar Heel defenders that landed like raindrops.
That's what I took from the second half. They didn't miss some shots that they had no business making.
Absolutely.
And the fact that North Carolina was in the game, essentially, because Villanova couldn't miss in the second half, I was amazed. If Villanova doesn't make those shots, North Carolina probably wins by 10.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And again, and that's another part of this game that I think adds to its luster is the fact that Villanova did have had a 10-point lead with about 5 minutes to go, and here come the Tar Heels chipping, right? Getting a 3-point bucket, right. Getting to the basket, getting to the free throw line, and just knocking it down, forcing a turnover, a block that led to a 3-point basket on the other end. Hart went up for a layup, it got blocked, it turned into a 3-pointer on the other end. I mean, it was just this really fantastic string of plays that were all blended together and allowed North Carolina to come back into the game. But there was one shot. Jenkins had a shot where he felt like he launched it to Mars.
Yeah.
And it fell straight down into the hoop, just trying to get over the arms of the defender. And you're right. It's like, oh my God, they're making those?
Yeah, exactly. They were making shots that I just kind of stood up and I kind of like walked out of the room for a second because you shouldn't be making those shots time after time after time.
Yeah, and I think Jenkins hit a three where he wasn't even set to the basket.
No, he was.
At the top of the key. And I think Rafferty pointed it out. He wasn't even set to shoot the three. The time was winding down on the clock, and he just sort of looked up and then just kind of hucked it up there, and it knocked it down. And so there's a lot of things like that in this game. I thought it was great and good for Jay Wright. He's been maligned a bit, and I know it's just the nature of the beast. When you've had talented number one and number two teams in the tournament, you get knocked out in the first weekend, you're going to get ripped. You know, no one's calling for Jay Wright's job. He's a fantastic coach. Villanova's lucky to have him, but that didn't mean he wasn't immune to criticism. You know, but listen, let me ask you this, because there's going to be this natural inclination of people to look at North Carolina and say, could Roy Williams have made an adjustment here or there towards the end? I'm not that Zapruder film-like when it comes to this stuff, but I wonder if he could have made it just a little bit more difficult for Villanova in the final possession.
Oh, in the final possession, yes, he could have. I thought he was going to take a timeout. You see how the team sets up, and then you call a timeout.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't do that. And I'm sitting there, I was like, Villanova has no timeouts. Do you want to give him another chance to draw something up? And you get a chance to kind of set up how you want to set it up. But also another thing to remember towards the end of the game, remember when Marcus Page hit a shot, a layup, when he got the offensive rebound, laid it back in, and then he had to look to Roy Williams to know what to do, and then for the next seven, I would say somewhere between 12 to 14 seconds, Villanova just passed the ball around before North Carolina finally fouled.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah, towards the end of the game, they lost seconds.
I want to say there was 27 seconds left.
Yeah,
when
they
made
lost.
The bucket,
you're right.
It was 13 when they finally fouled.
Yeah, they finally fouled a guy in the corner.
Yes.
Right. I think it was Hart who was in the corner, and they finally fouled him. But you're right. They could have fouled at the top. They could have fouled in the backcourt, and they didn't either. They let Villanova kind of play around a little bit. That's absolutely correct.
And it's because they didn't know what to do. And a senior like Marcus Page should know what to do in that situation.
Sure, absolutely.
You have to foul. There's no not fouling in this situation because they can run the clock out.
Well, on a weekend where the games were not very entertaining and you could get away with getting, leaving the games, this was a good nail biter.
Yes, it was.
A lot of fun. One year I'll watch the team stream broadcast instead of Nance. But I love Nance. He's perfect for these settings. But I did miss one shining moment this year. Shame on me. Coming up, Colin Kaepernick. Yes, Kaepernick. Why he was right next.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Working the third shift. This is Tony D.
Once again, from the Quicken Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. We were trying to sort out yesterday the Colin Kaepernick Denver Broncos situation, and basically where it stood was, hey, the Broncos would love to have Colin Kaepernick. It appears that San Francisco wouldn't mind getting rid of Colin Kaepernick, but the Broncos don't want to pay him his full salary of like $11.5 million, and the 49ers don't want to pay a lot of money in guarantees, so they're all trying to get Colin Kaepernick to just, take a pay cut to get a new lease on life. You can only imagine how they're selling this. Well, Matt Bowen at ESPN had a great article today talking about, hey, for those of you who want to rip Colin Kaepernick for not taking the pay cut to get a new lease on life, he owes them nothing. He owes this league nothing. He owes Denver nothing. He owes the 49ers nothing and shouldn't even come close to even thinking about taking a pay cut. And I know here is where we as fans go off the rails a little bit, because sometimes we think that in the end, all of this money is just so big and it's unfathomable that somebody can make this kind of money that in the end, it becomes like monopoly cash and they can just toss it around, because in the end, what guys really want are championships and rings, and how dare they not want to pursue that in the pursuit of money. But the reality of it is, and this is the situation with Colin Kaepernick, is that $4.9 million is a boatload of money to just give back to a league that doesn't give anything back to players in terms of the deals that they make. This is a league that has a great, great collective bargaining agreement. Contracts aren't guaranteed. Players get cut all the time. Yeah, you may have to shift some money around. Yeah, the signing bonuses can be good, but you can just be thrown off for a bad year. We hear stories all the time in Major League Baseball of teams still writing checks to players that are long gone from the sport because of bad deals. But in the NFL, no. You can sign the mega deal and be cut 2 years later. And now Colin Kaepernick is going to get ripped by some people because he's not going to give $4.9 million back. Why should he give it back? Oh, I know, right? He should want to play for the Denver Broncos. After all, the Broncos won the Super Bowl. After all, he has a chance to work with Gary Kubiak and learn from John Elway. Like Elway's going to come down and teach Kaepernick how to throw a bullet pass. No, this is too much money to give up. And if you're the union, you have absolutely get into Colin Kaepernick's head and say, listen, no chance. You're too young to be taking this pay cut. It's one thing if, and Matt Bowen points this out, if you're Peyton Manning, you do take a pay cut the latter part of your year. You're closing out your career. You want to stick around, this is what you're going to have to do. But this money is guaranteed to him on the 49ers. If the 49ers don't want to pay it, then the 49ers have a problem, not Colin Kaepernick. And if the Denver Broncos don't want to chip in and pay the full freight, the Denver Broncos have a problem, not Colin Kaepernick. I know, Kaepernick's an easy target, but he shouldn't be an easy target on this one. Listen, I am a player's guy when it comes to money in the NFL. I think a lot of people are, just because of the sort of the insecurity of their deals. And yes, a lot of money for these players, sure, but boy, there is no security and the damage that they do to their bodies long term. So anytime a player can get a leg up on ownership, I'm all for that. I want players to be treated better. I want players not to go down this road of helping out, you know, owners in the, like in this particular case. Again, if you're Peyton Manning and you need to take a pay cut to save a player or two, that's fine. There are exceptions to every rule. But in this case, if you don't like Colin Kaepernick, San Francisco, that is on you. That is your deal. You're the one that signed him. If Chip Kelly all of a sudden wants somebody else, well, then figure out how to pay this man his money and get rid of him. And Denver, if you don't want to pay the full freight for a quarterback because, you know, you're smart, you're managing the money well, that's fine too. But this isn't on Kaepernick. This is on two teams that don't know what to do with his deal, that have no one else to blame but themselves. This isn't, this shouldn't be a, oh, what's more important, money or rings? A, there's no guarantee he ever gets a ring in Denver. B, there's no guarantee he's not going to get a ring in San Francisco. And C, this is the deal he signed. You know, it's funny how contracts work, right? They're two-way streets. You don't like it, too bad. I've been kept to contracts. It stinks, but that's a deal I signed. That's a deal station signed. I remember fighting one for forever, and finally I got really good advice that said, you know what? Next time, don't put your name on it. Next time, really think it through. Kaepernick signed a great deal. The 49ers should have anticipated it. And if and look, and I don't know where the Denver Broncos are going quarterback-wise. I don't know what their future is. Is it Mark Sanchez? Is it getting a guy in the draft? Is it picking up Kaepernick eventually? Trying to figure out and making that work and maybe paying him his full freight? Or maybe they come to a deal with the Niners where the Niners pick up a majority of it? I don't know. But if you're John Elway and you have an idea of what you want to pay for that position for a certain talent level, either two things, find the right guy or make amends to that. Or manage that a little bit differently. But I just love the defense of, again, a young quarterback. And it doesn't matter. Don't argue his talent, right? You can't argue. Don't argue that. That's not at play here. Because here's the other thing that often gets overlooked by fans. Is that a lot of times fans think players have the same perception of them as they do. We hear this all the time. He has to know he's never going to win a title. He has to know he's never. Why would he know that? Oh, he has to know if he goes plays for them. You know who I thought wouldn't win a Super Bowl? Reggie White, when he went to Green Bay. When Reggie White went to Green Bay, they were a terrible team. This is a crazy league. You never know who you're getting. You never know how the season plays out. You never know. You may catch lightning in a bottle and all of a sudden have a successful offense, or your defense plays better, or you grab a couple of players in free agency in a year or two. You don't know how these things work. We think we know, but they don't. So this idea that Kaepernick should go to Denver to win a title, what if he never wins a title? Are they going to give him the $4.9 million back? What if he's in San Francisco and he wins a title? All of a sudden it's worth the $4.9 million that they were supposed to not, they didn't want to have to pay to give Denver the quarterback? Again, when it comes to money, different frame of reference. Titles and rings are important. Giving $5 million back to ownership because nobody wants to give it to you? I wouldn't do that for $5 million. It's insane. And it's wrong to sort of rip Kaepernick because he wants to keep the money that's owed him. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. Coming up next, we'll talk to Ryan Fagan. We caught up with him earlier tonight from Sporting News about the NCAA tournament and Villanova's championship. What did he see? What did he like? What did he not like? We'll get the lowdown of that next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio. And YahooSportsRadio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue to digest the national championship game in Houston, where Villanova beats North Carolina on a game-winning three by Chris Jenkins at the buzzer. Ryan Fagan joins us from Sporting News to put his spin on what we saw in Houston. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing all right. Still trying to figure out if what I think I saw actually happened there.
It's kind of weird. This is where I admit I take a whole bunch of notes and I write down things like could be a turning point, could be a turning point, and then I scratch them all because the end of the game was pretty much incredible. How did you see at least the Page shot and then the Jenkins shot in terms of how they were executed?
Well, I mean, the Page shot, it felt like a broken play. You know, and that's when some of the crazy things happen. I mean, you look at what he did and the fact that, you know, he jumps in the air, he has to regather himself. And, I mean, that's hard to do on a playground. That's hard to do in an open gym. When you're talking about on that stage, that far out, in the national championship game with your team down three, to be able to right himself, make sure that he got his, you know, his elbow straight like you're supposed to on a shot and knock that down. I mean, that could have gone down as one of the greatest shots in title game history. It could have, and yeah, it still should have, but because of what Chris Jenkins did next, it becomes the footnote. It becomes what makes Chris Jenkins' shot even greater, which is, you know, hard to imagine.
I know we're going to be dissecting this, and there'll be a lot of people that will say, here's the angle, and this is where the defense kind of failed. But were you surprised that Jenkins got a very clean look with all the way across the court kind of three?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of one of those things that, you know, he doesn't look like he's big time into the play because he's kind of hanging back. It almost looks like he's the guy that's there to be an outlet in case UNC's pressure forces Archie Diacono to pass the ball. But really what he was doing is he was just kind of trailing. That way you don't have the UNC guys up in the space necessarily. And Jenkins is a guy that doesn't have to be right on the line or inside the line. He's got range. He's got range for days. We've seen this through the entire tournament. So he was very supremely confident that he was going to knock down that shot. Jay Wright, you know, designed that play, obviously. Jay Wright did just a phenomenal job of coaching all the way through the tournament, but especially once they got into the Final Four. The way that he figured out a defense to shut down Oklahoma's perimeter attack in the first game, and then the way that he frustrated North Carolina's bigs after they had dominated Syracuse in the Final Four in that title game, I mean, really just was a command performance.
Ryan Fagan joins us, Sporting News, on the NCAA tournament won by Villanova over North Carolina. I know that when you have a team that shoots as well as Villanova did, not only Saturday but also tonight, there's really no way to kind of – sometimes shots just fall. But is there something they did offensively that helped them get the kind of high percentages that they were getting in both the game against Oklahoma and tonight?
Well, you know, I mean, they move the ball exceptionally well. They run off screens very well. They create open shots. And, you know, let's be honest, some of the shots that Villanova hit, especially, you know, Stoll Booth coming up with the game of his career, were contested at the end of the shot clock. I mean, if you go back and look, I bet Villanova probably made six or seven shots in the last 5 or 6 seconds of the shot clock, and they weren't always great looks because North Carolina did do a good job playing defense. But, you know, Carolina's going to, once they feel like they can finally go back and watch tape of this, which may be a little while because this is going to sting, but they're going to find that, you know, there were too many open shots.
Did you notice something from North Carolina late in that second half or midway through that second half when Villanova extended their lead to 10 that was just not working for them? Was it just simply missing shots, or did they switch up some stuff that really they needed to get back on track?
Well, I think there are a couple things that helped Villanova get out to that bit of a lead. You know, one, that they denied Bryce Johnson the ball. You know, he didn't touch the ball nearly as much as North Carolina wanted to. You know, obviously he's so good in there. He's on everybody's first, second, or third team All-American. And he just didn't see the ball enough, you know, quite frankly. And Kennedy Meeks had a couple of shots down low, missed more chippies than he normally would. You know, they just couldn't seem to find any sort of focus. And you could sense, watching it, it looked like by body language, as those amateur body language decipherers of us, it looked like they were frustrated. You know, maybe some of that had to do with the fact that shots weren't going down. Some of that had to do with the fact that some of the fouls seemed to go against them. 50-50 calls went Villanova's way. They let that snowball just a little bit. You know, obviously they came rolling back. They were down 10 points with you know, you talk about turning points. I actually put a tweet out there, like 5:20 left. I said, North Carolina's down by 10. We're getting to the point that it's going to take a memorable comeback for the Tar Heels to get back in this one with 5 minutes left. And that's exactly what they did, right up to the point where Chris Jenkins hit the greatest shot in tournament history.
When you look back on this game as a whole, Were you surprised by anything Villanova was able to do in this game? Down low, they did pretty well. Outside, they did pretty well. Was there anything surprising?
The success that Villanova had on in the paint, I think, was not expected. You know, I think, and that goes for both sides. That goes for the job that they did defensively, keeping North Carolina. I mean, remember, North Carolina dominated Syracuse in the post, in the Final Four. I mean, they dominated teams the entire way through. That's the way you look at it. That's the way they got there. You know, they played good in the first half of these games. They generally had a 4 or 5 point lead. And then they dominated in the second half because they dumped the ball down low to Bryce Johnson and Kennedy Meeks. Villanova kept them from being able to get good looks down there for the most part. And then Villanova did a great job scoring down there. I mean, Josh Hart was amazing, going after offensive rebounds, creating tipping balls. That's another thing that Villanova did. Their guards and their bigs did a great job of kind of getting their hands in passing lanes and not letting North Carolina get any easy entry passes into the bigs down low.
Now that we've had a couple of hours to digest, there's a couple of minutes really to digest all of this, and I'm not a guy that wants to run to best ever, and even just because it's a buzzer beater, two teams can play like garbage and a game could end in a buzzer beater. But as far as the way this game was played, was this a well-played game by both teams? Is this one of the most memorable, better finals we've ever had?
Yeah, I think so, without a doubt. I think it goes on a list. I'm not ready to say it's the greatest one ever. But, you know, you look at both teams shot the ball very well. This wasn't a close game like UConn was a couple years ago. Both teams shot, you know, the ball very well. I mean, you look at it and from deep, North Carolina shot 64% from three, and Villanova shot 57% from three. That's pretty darn good. But if you're talking about just strictly finishes, I think, you know, for me, this goes right up there to the top of the list.
All right, Jay Wright and his Wildcats. This is a coach that's had trouble getting out of the first weekend after the Final Four run in 2009. He's been criticized for it. He's now got a champion in this team. When we look back on this Villanova team, it's senior-lated, Archie Diacono, all of these kind of players. What will we remember about the Villanova Wildcats of 2016?
Yeah, I mean, it'll sound cliche, but we'll remember that it was a great team. You know, I mean, there aren't any guys that are going to go be drafted in the top 10 or 15. You know, that seems to be the way that, you know, over the last 10, 15 years, the teams that have won championships are the guys that are led by future NBA stars. You know, you look at the Duke team that won a couple years ago. You look at, I guess last year, it feels like a while ago. You look at the Carmelo Anthony team that Syracuse won with. You know, there's always been that kind of thing. Well, Villanova doesn't really have that. What they have is they have a lot of a couple seniors in Diacono. Archie Diacono and Daniel Chefu, and they have a bunch of juniors, guys like Chris Jenkins, and they got a couple younger guys who have played big minutes in their time at Villanova, and they just understand their roles and what they do well as a team. You know, this is the type of team that, I'll be honest, you know, and you talk about Jay Wright, you know, I did something before the Sweet 16, ranking the coaches who were left just based on strictly what they had done in the NCAA tournament, and Jay Wright was in the bottom half of the 16 because of the struggles that they've had. I mean, in the last five trips for Villanova to the NCAA tournament, they'd been a one seed once and a two seed twice, and they hadn't made it even to the Sweet 16 either time. So there were some issues, and now it's not Jay Wright's fault. Jay Wright is a great coach, and I tried to say that over and over. I think he's a great coach, and I always said he's going to win a title. I didn't think it'd be this year. But he proved that, you know, he deserves his status there as one of the elite coaches in the country.
Ryan Fagan, Sporting News, great job. I really appreciate your time tonight. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, coming up next, we'll talk more about the NCAA tournament, but we'll also get into the NFL, a really good piece on the Colin Kaepernick, why he won't take a pay cut to go to Denver, and why that criticism is crazy. It's coming up next. And again, 800-777-2907. I am Tony D, taking you through the night on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the Third Shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, so let's put the finishing bow, Adam, on the 2016 NCAA tournament. Good champion, Villanova. It's not like a 7 seed won it or anything like that.
Right.
Had some upsets. Had some really fun upsets, like Middle Tennessee State. Had the epic collapse of Northern Iowa. Syracuse made a one for the ages run of the underdog. Other than that, is there anything that sticks out and makes you go, yeah, 2016, what a memorable year that's going to be?
No, because I was thinking about it. Remember our complaint about the NFL season, and it's been our complaint kind of for the NBA season. It's just a lot of bad football or a lot of bad basketball. College basketball wasn't any better.
Yeah, you're right.
College basketball was a bunch of bad basketball that we got to the tournament. The first weekend was a bunch of bad basketball, yes, with some fun finishes. The second weekend got better. The Sweet 16 in the Elite Eight games, there were some good ones in there. Final Four weekend Saturday night was awful. I mean, we had a, 47-point blowout?
And
We had a good national championship game. So yeah. We saw a lot of bad basketball with some good basketball sprinkled in. And I wouldn't say, you know, 2015-16 season, that's definitely one not to remember.
Yeah, I'm with you a little bit. I think it's a good championship. It's a memorable championship. The path to it, I don't think is that memorable. I do think the people will kind of look back and remember the Northern Iowa thing. That kind of was a big deal.
Yeah.
That was 12 points in, 20 seconds, something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. See, I already don't remember.
Right. It was a big comeback quick.
I always think about this every single year, and it's one of those things that come up every year, and then I forget about it, and then when it comes up again, I go, oh, yeah. And and I was kind of making a joke about it, the team stream that the TBS and other. How come, I don't know, is that popular? Is that something that could catch on with other sports? Like, let's say the Bears are in a playoff game against the Dallas Cowboys, and you could watch a secondary feed of the Bears radio play-by-play guy. Same video, same commercials, same all of that, but instead of Nance and Sims, you get the Bears play-by-play guy on radio.
I would check it out.
Would you check it out? Well, or is that something you feel like you need? I don't know. Because I don't know if there's a need for this. Is there a need for this where people are like so? Do people feel like Jim Nance and his crew are so anti them that they feel like this is something necessary? It's necessary enough for them to invest in it into putting this together.
Well, what I noticed on Twitter is the fact that I saw a lot of people, and they're mostly being retweeted or answered to. But it was a lot of people not understanding what the team stream was.
Oh, yeah,
they kept
right.
saying, like, oh, if this guy needs to put on a Villanova cheerleading outfit
yeah, I
if
know.
He keeps talking like this. And they didn't understand what the actual team stream meant.
Yes,
they haven't done a good
right.
job of telling us what's going on here.
They really need to make it better than just like a small thing down at the bottom, because they have like this small thing that says team stream on the team. Like when they show the score, that shows team. They have to do a much better job than that.
They need to put like at the top, they could do who the announcers are and what, you know, from the 1985 Villanova team has this guy or, you know, this guy. It's just that's what they need to tell fans or whoever turns on the game.
Yeah, because you're right. You're not, if you're listening to the Villanova radio guy, you're going to feel like, man, they're always anti Tar Heels. Right. I don't believe this. Well, of course they're yes. Of course they are. So I don't know. I don't watch it enough. I just go to Nance. I'm a big Nance guy. I like
turned
Nance.
It on. I bet you I watched 4 seconds.
Yeah, and I don't.
And that's because I didn't realize I was on it. And then
I think Florida was in the Final Four a handful of years ago. And Mitch Huber is the play-by-play guy for the Gators. And my wife watched that for a little bit. But that's the extent of team stream in my house.
Right.
So
it's just I don't think it's needed. I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah, I don't either.
I would like to see the ratings breakdown between the three channels and see kind of how it worked out. And I'm sure that'll come out here tomorrow or today.
I can't believe Nance has it in his contract that this could be allowed. I would think if I was Nance, I mean, Nance has got some clout. I would be like, no, I'm not going to go. No. We're getting rid of this. You're going to have an opportunity to go listen to somebody else do the game. I am the voice of the Final Four.
Maybe he just realizes, like, I don't really care. I'm getting my same amount
of money.
Yeah, he's probably like,
I'm going to the Masters right now.
I get my same amount of money, even if these are, if everybody's watching the team streams and nobody's listening to me, I still get my money.
I think he wants to have that moment. I mean, I think most broadcasters have that feeling. It's like money is money, but there's also that historical moment that you're, I mean, that's a shot for the ages, and you want to be the guy.
See, I
delivered
think,
that moment.
That's
why he comes up with those catchphrases. Yeah, why he comes up with when the Masters is over, he feels like he's part of that moment. That's why he says, this is one for the family or one for the ages or however he spins it. He wants to be the guy that makes the call.
I completely agree with what you're saying on that. And I understand that. I think nowadays, though, with social media and the way technology works, that probably a lot of people, especially like Super Bowl or, you know, games like this, if they have a party for it, they're not listening with the sound on. So they go back later and
that's
listen to
very
what Nance
true.
Does.
That is
or,
very
you know,
true.
How the what the call was. Because I know I've done that. I go to Super Bowl parties and I don't hear what happens. So then I go back and listen to it later.
Yeah, you know, it's a really weird business because I don't think the sports broadcaster like Nance and Buck are big. I mean, they're big names, but they were never Howard Cosell big.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they never transcended the sport and in into another level. And that is something that's a lot different than it was like 40 years ago. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.